Blog Talk Radio.
Al Capone either. That was actually Mr. Prince Buster, who recently passed away. Big ups to Judge Dredd, Judge 400 Years himself, Mr. Prince Buster. And the name of that song, of course, was Al Capone. Like I said, you guys are listening to Cleftico's Radio. Actually, I don't know if I said that or not, but you are. Nonetheless, listening to Cleftico's Radio. I was going to have Gabriel Ricard on the program tonight, but unfortunately I don't think I will. But I do have Mr. KJP Garcia on the line with us, and we'll bring him on in a little bit here momentarily. I did want to give a quick shout-out to everybody out there and let you guys know that we are accepting submissions for issue number 10 of Cleftjaw. You guys can go to www.cleftjaw.com/submissions and be sure to read those guidelines there and, of course, submit. We are accepting at the moment. I believe it's up to 3 poems, and anything that's like fiction, nonfiction, prose. I believe we're actually going to get some like screenwriting submissions in, if I'm correct, Mr. Dustin Holland, wink, wink. But yeah, you guys can send all that stuff in as long as it's no longer than 5,000 words. Once again, go to www.cleftjaw.com/submissions submissions, yeah, send us your stuff. We need that shit. Also, did want to give a, a really big thank you to our family over there at Cheeseburger Nebula Galactic, and of course to the people there at Mercury Cafe for a, well, goddamn, it was an excellent event at the Mercury Cafe on, I believe that was August 20th of this year. And if you guys weren't there, of course, you can always go to clefjaw.com and click on the videos tab there. Actually redirect you to our YouTube page and catch some of those videos on there. I do want to go ahead and say that there is a swamp cooler that makes an appearance in the readings, and I just want to say to that swamp cooler that I hope you die. Hope you die a horrible, horrible death, swamp cooler. You're a bastard. Nonetheless, it was a great show. Wish you guys were there, and of course, if you weren't, there are rumors going around that there will be a Clefjaw versus Cheeseburger Nebula Galactic Round 2 coming up pretty soon. We're hoping for November, but you never know about these types of shows. In any case, whenever it does happen, hopefully you're there in Denver. Also, big shout-out to Mutiny Information Cafe and the Pie Hole in Denver as well. Those are really great places. You guys should go check those out. I can't stress enough about the Pie Hole. You should go check out the chicken and waffles pizza. That shit is real. I'm talking like syrup, I'm talking chicken, waffle bits, and gravy on a pizza. It's like the best science that I've ever heard of in my entire life. I don't even know if it's culinary science, man, and it's the best. You should go get that. I think that's about it for updates as far as, you know, submissions, shows, what have you. Before I bring Mr. Kenyatta on the line, I do want to mention that we had him on the last episode. I'm going to kind of pick up an interview from there. And if you guys haven't checked that out, just go to our Blog Talk page here. Check out the last episode with Mr. KJP. God, I can't talk tonight. KJP Garcia. How you doing, man? You good? Yeah. You doing good tonight?
How's it going?
You know what? I've got cotton mouth because I was celebrating Prince Buster's death, like, too early, I think. You know? And that's, like, kind of ironic because the guy was, like, seriously, like, straight edge. And from what I can tell from, like, songs like Blackhead Chinaman and shit like that, like, really racist. It's like a racist guy, actually. It's kind of fucked up, right?
It's always the worst, right? When you like somebody, you're like, wow, you're actually pretty problematic. Like, that's the worst feeling.
I grew up like
the music.
Like, I grew up idolizing, like, Jay Adams from the Z-Boys of Dogtown, like a skater crew or whatever. And, just like a couple years ago, I found out that he was arrested in Los Angeles for, like, killing a guy for, you know, being gay and stuff, and like I was like, holy shit, like,
oh wow,
yeah, I had no idea. And then like I guess he became like a like really uber Christian like before he passed away and shit too, so I was like, I don't know, your heroes always have the capacity to, you know, just like completely disappoint you, and I think that's why I appreciate him more than the anti-heroes. I guess, I don't know.
I get that. That's like one of those scary things, you know, it's like one of those weird things. I was talking to someone recently about Amiri Baraka, right? He's like a, you know, a straight poet, everybody loves him, you know, like he was really like, you know, one of the few black guys really making it in the beat scene, you know, but he's got some pretty homophobic stuff out there, and you're like, I don't know if I want to get behind that guy, you know.
It's a tough thing. I felt like that the first time I read like Soul on Ice by Eldridge Cleaver. I was like, before I read that book, I was like, man, this guy's like the shit, you know, Minister of Information for the Black Panther Party. I was like, yeah, you know. And then I read the book and I found out he's like really chauvinistic and like really homophobic. And I was like, holy shit, man. Like, it kind of blows you away. Same thing. Yeah. It is. Well, welcome back to the program, man. Thanks for sticking around with us. And, sorry we couldn't get this, like, scheduled any time sooner than that. But
it's all good. It gave me time to go get a couple drinks with a couple buds down the block and come on back.
Right on, man. Right on. I got to be honest with you. Like, I was having trouble staying awake because I just switched over to the third shift at my job. And shit's brutal, man. How do you put up with that kind of stuff?
Only years and years of doing it. My first couple years were horrible. I would, you know, managed to get through the night, and then as soon as I got home, I'd go to sleep, but then I would wake up, and want to go back to sleep at the normal time anyway. So I'd only be there were days where I was only awake for 4 or 5 hours, and it was like it was really gross, you know. But now my body's always awake until 7 a.m. It's a very weird thing.
Like, yeah.
Oh, I want to go to sleep. I have things to do in the day. Nope.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if you watch The Strain or anything or read the graphic novels, but I really am starting to feel like a Strigoi. I'm starting to feel like one of the vampires from that fucking show. Like,
yep. Yeah.
You know, it's rough,
I
man. It really is.
The first season, but it's a great show, isn't it?
Oh, it is, man. I'm on the third season, so it's definitely a good one. So, like, being a person that works on third shift, of course, you know, there's a lot of debate about when is the best time to sit down and write or create or what have you. Do you find that being on a third shift, and, of course, you know, like you said, you get off work, you're tired. Do you find, like, when you're tired and, like, of course, your thoughts are a little bit more lucid, do you find that's a better time to write for you personally, or is it, like, just before you go to work, or when's the best time for you?
Well, okay, so I like to force myself to do something when I get home from work, right? Whether that is read or write, okay? I'm always hopeful that something will give me inspiration to write. So what I do when I get home from work, that's when I read nonsense, right? Or but that's, what, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, nothing hard, right? That's when I'm like, now it's comic book time, right? But sometimes that doesn't produce any writing. Every once in a while you get lucky, you're like, wow, yeah, man, like, for some reason this issue of Justice League Dark was hitting it, you know? But when I really want, to like write something, that's when I'm like right out of bed. Like I wait, like I go to bed around 9, wake up around 5. You know, I got 3 hours before work. I'm like, hit the coffee shop, bring the chapbooks that you have, you know, that people have sent you. Bring like the whatever the latest book of poems you have that you're reading, and then try to get to work. So I think right out of bed is the best time for me. But I will never stop myself from trying to write after work. But for me, it's that right out of bed, get going. And sometimes I have leftover dreams, you know, like sometimes you're like going out of bed, like you have that. And my whole thing is like this dream thing. It's always like, oh, hold on to it for as long as possible.
Nice. I think like Henry Miller was like along the same lines. He was talking about having those first thoughts in the morning as soon as you wake up from a dream, and how, like, limber his mind would be, like, in the writing process, and how he would sit and would write for a good 2 to 4 hours before even moving from the chair. And I guess that's a lot easier to do if you don't have, like, a 9-to-5. Like, none of us are, like, posting up, like, classified ads on, like, bulletin boards at the public library to travel the world like that asshole was. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
but,
exactly.
Yeah. No, I'm glad to see that practice still works. Now, you recently mentioned that you have a new book coming out called Slow Living. Is that a chapbook or is that like a full length?
No, that'll be a full length book. It's really, maybe it's more like 2 chapbooks put together. Maybe, well, they're both kind of on the longer end, right? So like neither one is short enough to really be a chapbook, but they're long enough to put together to be a book, right? So like sometimes chapbooks are like, oh, we want 25 pages. You know, so these are each about 30 pages, 31 pages, you know. In the end, after all the, like, table of contents, all that stuff like that, we're looking at, like, 70-some pages. But, yeah, so they're both, 2 has a little bit longer. Slow Living is really the name of the first part, but it carries over. It's kind of easier to have a shorter name than, like, Slow Living and, you know. But
right,
the second half
yeah.
is called Dear Later, and that's a series of, like, short letters, kind of diary entry stuff.
Oh, nice, man. Very cool. And that's coming out through West Vine Press, is that right?
Yes, West Vine Press. Editor Andrew Kohurovich, I hope I did not ruin that man's name, but he's a spatial he-monkey on online. Really cool guy, approached me to do this, so that was really cool. You know, he asked me like, if I had anything in the works, and I said, I sure do. You know.
That's awesome,
and
man.
West Vine
looks really
like they've got some good stuff out there, too.
Yeah, I've been checking them out all day since you, like, mentioned that. Or not all day, at least for the last hour or so.
Yeah,
but it just feels like all day, man. It really does.
Yeah, I understand that.
No, I'm glad that you have a new book coming out. Would you like to share some of that new one with us tonight?
Yeah, sure. So here we go. This is going to be from the first part. This is from Slow Living, okay?
Okay.
The best place not to live watching backs moving away, disappearing almost rhythmically with a song and true aim, sitting down in a transitional town, ashtrays emptied and replaced. The ass finds comfort on even the hardest rock after being there a while, the sound of empty cans rolling, rattling by, a symphony against the stillness of pine cones, acorns, fallen from safety of leaves. Where are those slippers, glasses, and coffee just set down? Cross that bridge when it's within reach. Those beautiful days when the city resembles an origami swan folded out of near two-dimensionality into a near, almost animate representation of that transformation from the duckling. Now, hair combed and lotions applied with perfume and rosy cheeks to meet the one always talked about. And I'll stop there. But, it, you know, obviously it keeps going for like 30 pages. But, yeah, it's kind of my little thoughts on Albany. It's a pretty slow town.
Yeah.
And
no,
no,
I
one's
like
supposed
the,
to be here forever.
Yeah. No, I like the whole disconnected reflection there. Like, you don't, like we were talking about on the last show, where it's just like it's sort of a veritable narrative for the reader, because anybody or any person can be in that situation. And that's what
yeah.
I really appreciate about your work, is it's completely disconnected from any sort of like ultra-personal narrative, of course. Mm-hmm. Whenever you sit down and you're out, of course, like reflecting on anything, do you ever find it like really hard not to put yourself into the poem? Or do you, I mean, is that something that just comes easier for your like style or what have you?
Well, so there's really these two ways I deal with writing a poem, right? Like I have these poems where I'm just like, stay close to the occurrence, right? Try to stay close to whatever's going on around you. And remember, it's going around you, you're not in it, right? So
mm-hmm.
I try to just stay as observational as possible, right? And those are certain series of poems. A lot of times those don't pan out into anything long. Those end up in magazines a lot, right? But then for my longer stuff, that's when I say I can do, I can either try to extend that for as long as possible, which is hard. It's hard to write something like Slow Living or The Sound of Education, right? But I also have these slipstream verse novels, and then I fall in there, okay? There's no way for me to stop that, where it's just like, even if it's about a cyborg and a mermaid, guess who the cyborg is, you know?
Yeah, kind of right?
Like, I can't help myself there, you know? Same thing with Robot, like the whole Wasteland thing. I was like, that's my story. I can't do anything about it, you know? But I try
yeah.
to understand that we can separate that. Like, there's room for your narrative. There's room for something else, you know? And it's been important to me to figure out how to separate those two and how to allow myself to get away, but then every
mm-hmm.
once in a while how to come back, whether it's
that's
in
really
a disguise.
Cool.
And actually, come back in disguise is fun.
Yeah, no, like, and I love it when that works really well. I think, like, off the top of my head, I can think about, like, David Foster Wallace and Thomas Pynchon both have this knack for describing, like, a scene, or even, like, in Infinite Jest, David Foster Wallace describes this tennis academy and the inner workings of, like, the piping and everything, and he almost creates, like, this living, breathing creature out of his narrative, but he also, like you were talking about earlier, it's sort of like a slipstream narrative that slides into, like, the narrative of, like, the main character all of a sudden, and then slides
yeah.
right back into, like, the environment around him. And it's like everything bounces off of each other in that. And it's, in that way, I guess it's kind of like a, wow, it's kind of like a chaotic theory, like, sort of thing that happens in poetry, and I kind of dig that, man. I really do. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I like that, man.
There's that fun thing in poetry, right, where it's like you don't have to be attached to your story. And, like, once you understand that you don't need to be attached to a story or even the narrative, you can do whatever the hell you want. Like, I feel like people are scared of that, and I'm not scared to just walk away from the poem halfway through the poem. I mean,
yeah.
it's hard to say this is the end of it because I've walked too far away, but I kind of enjoy that moment of being like, I'll digress. I'll come back when I come back to it, you know? And when you write
right.
long poems, it gives you plenty of time to return.
Nice.
Like, meander for a little bit. Enjoy it.
Right. Who are some of your biggest influences in writing?
Oh, I was just talking to a few people the other day after a reading I did recently about how much I really like HD and how, like, reading the HD's trilogy, like, changed everything for me. And then Helen in Egypt, I was just like, oh, my God. I didn't realize how much you could do. And, like, she's just on another level. Like, HD is something special. Like, I don't know that there's another one like that. Maybe Alice Notley, like Culture of One, is great, but HD is up there. And Sam Beckett. I love Samuel Beckett.
Oh, wow. I did not.
I know him.
Samuel
like,
Beckett,
I call him
wow.
Sam.
Yeah. Nice. Very nice. I like that. Of course, I have never read HD, so I'm going to have to jump on that for sure. What was the name of that? Helen of Egypt, is that right?
Yeah, Helen in Egypt and Trilogy
Egypt.
Is the other one. Yeah.
Oh, cool. All right. I'm going to check that shit out, man. We've got about 10 minutes left of the show. How about we get another one from Slow Living before we check out?
Okay, let's see here. So we'll go with this right here. Surely it's the heart before the course, revolutionary suicide, sun sets and rises, and no reason to see the clock's hands before noon, the never was Catholic with all the peregrination of exiled Moses and selves. So, a trinity and three faces of one, and the rapture and chaos force dominant behind miraculous technique never to be seen, and also with you. Under the tree with rice milk, walking to the sea for salt, and on, all hips and torsos down to the bones, over the Pyrenees by foot, through the Alps, with elephants and horses' hooves, a phalanx against thousands, Ragnarok, Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Image, Faust, Milton, then hitting the snooze once more.
Nice. Fuck, man. Can I get that for Cleft Jaw 10? Can I get that one? That was awesome.
If you take excerpts, I can send you something.
Oh, yeah, I'll take it, for sure. I'll give everybody credit. Spatial, Humonkey, I got you, man. I'll give you guys credit, man. Goddamn, that was good, man. I really like the peregrine. Oh, man. The line about Catholic and go back there.
The never was Catholic peregrination of Moses. Peregrination of exiled Moses. Thank you.
Yeah, dude.
You know what? What's funny about this one is I've had this one. I've been sitting on it for a long time. Like, I'm so happy this is coming out because I've been sitting on this forever, and for a while I stopped writing, and I came back to it. I was talking to, like, a friend who was going to get her PhD at SUNY Albany, and I was just like, you know, a lot of people say don't write these long poems. I don't know if I should do it, and she was like, let me see it. And she really liked this one, so I guess the only reason, like, it's kind of out there because someone finally gave me the it's okay. So it's good to hear when people like it, because I was, like, so worried about it. I'm like, maybe this thing doesn't work. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe the long poem's not for me.
Oh, man, yeah. I know exactly what you're going through with that. So I feel that way about, like, this new book I've got. So I totally get what you're saying, man. Like, and I'm super stoked to get it, Slow Living. Where can everybody pick that up as soon as it comes out?
I will be able to go through West Vine Press, of course, when that comes out. Well, when that comes out, and then I guess I'll post it up on Facebook, on Twitter, on kjpgarcia.wordpress.com. Anywhere I am, it will be. Wherever Spatial Humonkey is, it will be.
Right on, man. Looking forward to that, dude. Fucking JP, man, I appreciate you coming by the show tonight. We definitely got to get you back on when season 5 starts up in October, so I hope you're down to do that. And please send me that last poem, man. That was amazing.
Oh, I will. Thank you very much.
Yeah, fucking A, man. Well, appreciate it, sir, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your evening.
Yeah, you have a good night, too. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you. All right. So that was Kenyatta J.P. Garcia. Once again, you guys can pick up Slow Living through West Vine Press as soon as that comes out. Like he said, go to his WordPress page, or you can go to Facebook and look up Kenyatta J.P. Garcia, KENYATTA JP Garcia. Hopefully you know how to spell Garcia. I'm hoping you guys are that smart. I know you guys are that smart. I believe in you. I really do. I really wanted to get, you know, either Gabriel Ricard or Frank Herbert on the program tonight. I don't know if Frank Herbert's still alive, and for that matter, I don't know if Gabriel Ricard is still alive. Probably is, though. I'm hoping he is. But in any case, I appreciate you guys coming by the program tonight. This is the last episode of season 4. These things are kind of sporadic, to be honest with you. We really don't have, like, a set schedule, so I appreciate everybody's support and coming by the shows and all the listens out there in the archives. And we will be back sometime in October for Season 5, Episode 1. I believe that's actually going to be on, let me see, hold on. I got a calendar here. Where are you, calendar? October 27th. We're going to go ahead and schedule that for October 27th at 3 p.m. Mountain Time. That would be 4 p.m. Central Standard Time and 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Of course, if you guys are on the West Coast, it's 2 o'clock, but, you know, you guys don't get up very... Wait, I am one of those guys. What am I saying? Anyway, I get all caught up in the Mountain versus West Coast beef. Before I get back to that topic, I do want to play this last track from Mr. Prince Buster, and I think it's very appropriate considering the fact that he recently passed on. Once again, even though the guy sucked, you know, in certain regards, like obviously the dude's a racist, still has some cool music. It's really hard for me to fucking say that shit, man. It really is. I don't know. Maybe next time we'll talk about, like, separating the artist from the art. I feel like that's like a dead dog topic, and it's been enough deaths and dogs and topics this week. So maybe we'll just save that for like a rainy day. In any case, this is Prince Buster, a little song called Ghost Dance. And I'm going to send this out to our curator of art. This is Miss Michaela Armijo. I'm going to go ahead and send this out to you. Toughest. She's the toughest. She knows what I'm talking about. Princess, blah, blah. This is Prince Buster, and the name of the song is Ghost Dance. You guys have been listening to Clef Tico's Radio. I'm your host, Frankie Met, and we'll catch you guys in Season 5.
Keeping the best of health. Always the music down here in Boneyard. I hear that Busby of a sound system. And that Naya Keith is this jockey. But them can't get no red stripe beer for selling down at night. Tell Zaki, the high priest, who used to lead the toughest, one who could go toughest. Give him my regards. Tell him, Prince Buster says, hello.
Professional Donor by Frankie Metro. An aspect of Mr. Jaramillo's nightmare that caused him the most befuddlement was the left pinky finger. As it unfolded, his aforementioned hand had augmented itself with what Pablo thought was blood from lack of proper circulation. And near the finale of the ordeal, he screamed in agony as Marissa, Hector, Cesar, Hector's wife, and especially Elena talked over his cries. He held up his hand and found out that the pinky finger was missing its distal phalanx, like he had been born with symbrachydactyly. In many cases, bones will be missing from the fingers, and some fingers may be missing altogether. The ends of the hand may have nubbins. small stumps where the hair would have developed, which may have tiny residual nails. Pablo thought it looked like a small dick that had been crudely circumcised. He always wore a white gold ring with a J. Quartz stone face, which he had purchased from Spencer's at the Cottonwood Mall back in high school. Scribed on the full shank were the words, "Bad motherfucker." Pablo was stirred from the dream, albeit momentarily, by the disfigured appendage, feeling absentmindedly for it and the ring in the dark, before realizing the pinky was still intact and the ring was still attached. Marissa, who had taken two Ativan as opposed to her usual one, experienced a much more pleasant scenario in her sleep. The rain continued to beat softly against the windows of her mother's house, and it must have been summer because even though the rain was on the other side of the glass, in the dark she could tell that the water was warm. It was almost like it was raining inside her room, her very own private and waterlogged oasis. The floors became dank, the sheets were saturated, but her pajamas stayed warm, moist, but always warm. When Pablo had made it to his feet, his eyes were fluttering beneath their shades, rolled back and completely vacant. He trekked around the edge of the bed, completely unaware, murmuring obscenities regarding the dynamics of the previous nightmare. He was still very deep in the process of escape. The manifesting panic had bonded with the skeleton and taken control of his basic motor functions, resulting in a blinded and somewhat drastic stunt of unaware mobility while Marissa snored softly on the other side.
These ants, these goddamn ants. Those sprinklers gonna... Fucking old bitch, I'm completely sober.
His bladder strained under an anvil tied to his lower back. His feet, the feet of a bloated marionette, moved closer to Marissa's side of the bed.
Fucking bitch,
he said, first in a low murmur, and then becoming more audible and adamant about the fact. He hovered over her, fiddling with the front of his Hanes boxers, only inches away from her hot breath, which had turned completely rancid from the piece of pork. He picked up the conversation where the incubus had left off.
Vodka!
Marissa slowly began to stir as the volume of his voice increased, but before she could pull herself away from the window and regain consciousness, Pablo began to urinate on her rotund face and finally in her mouth. The rain tasted salty and bitter, almost corrosive on her tongue, and she opened her eyes to find Pablo's dick, only an inch or so bigger than his favorite pinky finger, dripping at the edge of the sheets.
Again,
she whispered, fighting the urge to kick him in the testicles due to advisement on the matter from her mother. Marissa wiped her face on the silk bathrobe hanging over the bedpost and sat up. She led Pablo gently by the arm so as not to wake him and tucked him back in, wet briefs and all. Marissa, still feeling the effects of the extra Ativan, felt her way back to the other side and fell right in without a word otherwise. She didn't mention the puddle of Pablo's urine that had left a yellow, soggy center in the middle of the bed. They both simply drifted back in their respective corners of Nod until the sheets could be changed and the whole ordeal eventually forgotten. The hours closed in with these unspeakably cruel songs echoing throughout the valley, filthy narratives exchanged amid the dark constellations. Some nights, Cleto could hear a faint wincing coming from under the 2-inch crack of Pablo and Marissa's bedroom, a faint weeping beneath 600 pounds of careless snoring fat. It was Rosa, the dog, crying or pissing in a dark, cramped corner. She'd only let go in the space beneath her master's incoherent weight.